All right, boys, what's happening?
Ben?
Oh.
All right. Yes, semi-final week. Let's get a buzz going. Plenty to be happy about this week.
Certainly is.
Hi. Tam, nice to see you back. What's been happening?
Not much. It was away stag do last weekend, or what did you call it?
Do you actually listen back?
Call it what it was, Tam.
Yeah, well, I did edit it. Got manicures, spa days, all that. It was
How's your bikini line?
Big, wicked gamey laser tag with your mates. 16 slices, what a legend. Lads. You'll have been, you never went to the game on Saturday? Split loyalties get too much for you?
I will just say that. I was actually working, but let's just play the joke along. Well, couldn't handle it.
Who works on a Saturday?
Didn't know where to sit. You do.
Kev, what's been happening?
Not much, mate. Not much. Been a quiet weekend. No alcohol, which was a bit depressing, to be honest with you. As I was on call this weekend, but I could still make the game, so that was all right.
Oh, that was good. And for the folks that need to know, Kev likes sweet potato fries. I don't know if anybody wants to get involved in that debate. Myself, Ando and Tam are strictly in the absolutely no chance camp. So bombard us on social media if you are a sweet potato fries wanker. And explain your reason why.
I've been a complete adult for the last week, sorting out stuff for the house and gardening and all that. So anyway, that's boring, but never mind. You can't go after Kev like that when you yourself dropped an absolute bombshell in the green room before we started recording. So for everyone else out there in listener land, Corbett hates a roast dinner, says it's the most foul thing and one of the worst things on planet Earth. Also, hit us up on your social medias if you think that's absolute insanity. Because for me,
come at me, Toby Carberry. Give me what you got, like.
Their sponsorship right out the window, innit?
Oh, God. Aye, because we're about to sign with them as well, Kev. We're that close.
Toby Carberry is more of a rugby man, anyway, isn't he?
Aye, it'll be Toby Carberry and Phil the Power Taylor trying to argue with me that Yorkshire pudding Yankee candles are the way forward. He doesn't wear, Phil Taylor doesn't wear aftershave, he wears Bisto, just dabs it behind his ears.
Love it.
There you go. Aye, come at me. Sweet potato fries, roast dinner, scheme of your wildest food takes since probably next week we'll need to distract ourselves after an absolute spanking at Hampden. So
might just have a food podcast.
Have a roasted arse. That's what we'll need, won't it?
Absolutely.
Cool. Right. Obviously, this dissect Hearts 4, Livingston 2 on Saturday. I think I'd seen Hearts Standard earlier describe the opening 22 minutes as the worst of the season, followed by probably the best 25 minutes of the season. And I don't have that hard a stance on it. I know that was tongue-in-cheek by them as well, but we'll discuss the game. The highlights, lowlights, and everything else in between. Do some headlines. As we are recording now, it's Monday night, 10 to 10. Big Hearts have just launched their initiative to try and boost some ticket sales heading into Sunday's semi-final at Ibrox. As it stands right now, we will have less people at Hampden than we had at Tynecastle on Saturday, which is a bit, as I'm going to keep talking about, we spoke about last week and the week before, that really disappointing given how much the club have had to fight and what they're fighting for. So we can let it on the line. I know we won't labour it, we've done it over the last couple of weeks, but as it stands right now, Aberdeen today or yesterday handed back 10,000 tickets to Celtic because they've only sold 8,000 for their semi-final on Saturday. And as it stands right now, we'll have about 4 empty sections at Hampden in our end come Sunday. That means you're looking likely going to really struggle to get a cup final ticket because you're in dreamland if you think that 50-50 ticket split should we get Celtic in the final is going to be on offer. I think that that's highly unlikely, which is why the club are so vocally fighting for the 50-50 split, because this has been growing, as I said, over the last couple of weeks. This has been growing for a few years now, and now that we're sponsored by Viaplay, now that they only take Gold Firm games, the event organisers, the governing body, and the Old Firm themselves, putting pressure on everybody to ensure that they get no empty seats, but also, if there are going to be empty seats, they want them in the hands of Old Firm fans. So you'll be very, very lucky if Hearts make the final, if we get a 50-50 ticket split. So it's imperative that you do everything that you can. I know we said it last week. Big Hearts, if you're in a position to do so, I think they're asking people to donate either money or tickets, etc. And Big Hearts will make sure that through their community, through their list of connections of people that they interact with that could maybe otherwise not afford to go to the game, the tickets end in their hands and get them to Hampden. So if you haven't checked, do so. It's on Big Hearts Twitter, or X, whatever it's the cool kids are calling it now. Foundation of Hearts are behind it as well. We're behind it. So any of our social medias, if you want to donate or have tickets to donate, make sure you get behind it. And let's try between now and Sunday to get as close to 21,000 Hearts fans at Hampden as possible. All right, then.
Yep.
Agreed. Yeah, we've done my party political broadcast.
I mean, I can buy a ticket and go.
Well, I was coming on to that next, Ando, because I am on the very last page of my notebook. I'm now at a point where either you could just go on Sunday and I could not wear the two jackets, and we can just blame that for why we've been beat, and then go back to wearing two jackets, new notepad, and you not attending games. And we could, or we could just break the cycle. Do you know what I mean? Just you just come, we get beat, and
get on with our lives,
or we win, and you know.
Right, I'll do that. Exactly. And now that you've said that, that's good. We're on the same page, because my ticket's been bought a week ago, so I did delay it, and I thought, nah, your absolute psychopathy is getting the better of you here. I'm definitely going. So yeah, I'll be there.
Well, now we know who to blame.
If I see you on Sunday and you're not wearing two jackets, I'll kick off, because it'll be your fault.
No. I went to my Big Bill's 40th win anniversary over the weekend, and when Hearts were playing, I had two jackets on. So there you go. I also didn't watch the penalty come through on WhatsApp either. I made my dad look at my phone to let me know if Shankland had scored the penalty or not, because I can't. So what, another one of my very weird moments in football where I can't watch penalties being hit. So there we go. Right. I've got a Tam down since Tam's back. And last week, me and Ando were on absolute flames. But we'd have a good laugh at Tam.
So, I'm not going to lie, I'm glad I wasn't here for that, to be honest. I would have probably done
the headlines first and then a Tam down, or do you want to just get a Tam down out of the way straight away?
Let's go for the Tam down.
Go for the headlines.
Right. Oh, Ando, you've not got a camera.
There's no way around this. I'm acutely aware that... see, the thing is, when you do it, I'm delighted to take part, but it's typical. I don't have the hardware needed with a setup tonight. I'm not going to get my camera back until next week, which is a pain in the arse. But we'll have to work on the honour system. As long as it's not specific to a specific date or time, and then you can't really cheat anyway, can you?
Well, since it's relevant because we're heading into Hampden on Sunday for a game against Rangers, so I thought, why don't we take a trip down memory lane and have some Rangers games from Hampden. So this one was in the 18th of May 1996.
Okay.
Rangers 5.
Oh God.
Hearts 1. So there are 14 players, 3 subs, 11 outfield players. Who wants to go first? And you can go first since we can't see you. You get first.
So the most glaringly obvious one is going to be Gilles Rousset for what he done when he was in goal. So go with that.
Correct. Kevin.
So I'm going to take the position of Corbett to be tactful and try and take out the easy ones and absolutely cause Tam fucking probably some problems. But no, I will be I'll be nice to him. I will go with Pascale Bruno.
Correct. Thomas.
Just want to caveat this by saying I was 3 years old, so
doesn't matter.
Can't mind it. I believe that you're Alan Johnston.
Correct. Ando.
John Robertson.
Yes. Kev.
I'll go with Gary Locke. Unfortunately came off after what, 10 minutes or something?
Pretty much. 8 minutes on the clock when Gary Locke went off. Yep. Tam.
McPherson.
First name?
Dave.
Correct.
Big Slim.
Ando.
Disappointing.
Correct. Kev.
Did Alan McManus play in that game?
Never gets a start, Kev.
Right then. I thought he did. That game.
Right,
there you go.
He did. That was good. Oh, he did. He was a... Tamás.
Neil McCann?
No.
Okay.
You could have had your pal.
You missed a chance.
Remember it yet? Okay, and that's true.
It's gone. Didn't let him go back. Is it me next?
Yeah.
Baggio.
Correct. Kevin.
John Cahoon, because he scored.
Thanks, pal. John Cahoon.
Makes sense.
For anybody that doesn't know, John Cahoon's been on the podcast a couple of times and he absolutely hates them. It's superb.
It genuinely is, and it's still in our history. Go back and listen to it. The vitriol from John Cahoon, the nicest guy you'll ever meet towards Tam, is absolutely sensational.
Don't even think I've done anything, to be honest. But that's...
You totally deserved it. And it's so bad that you got finished. Right. On you go, Thomas.
I've got no hope anymore. Colin Cameron.
No.
Cool. Gaza Mackay, I think. Aye.
Yep. Correct. Yeah.
Alan Lawrence.
Oh,
Alan Lawrence came on. He came on for
Gary Locke.
For Rocky,
right.
Who's the other one? How many subs was there? Four?
No, three back in those days.
Three. I'll be honest, I've not been paying attention. But I'm sure you've still got a couple left to go, so we'll just keep going.
We'll see.
Who I don't even know who shot it is now.
It's time to me. I've honestly got no point. Just pass.
No, just say your heart's per. Come on.
I don't think it was his time, but Davy Weir, I think he signed with Jeffries.
Right out of left field. That is correct.
Oh, yes.
I'm kidding.
No, he's not.
Oh.
But thanks for trying.
Paul Ritchie, we said him already.
Yeah, Bozza.
Right.
He was there.
What a guy. I love Paul Ritchie.
Hey, Tam, do we and you not have a Paul Ritchie story? We're not standing next to Paul Ritchie at Easter Road.
Yeah.
That's right. Paul Ritchie, actually, I'm sure he listened to the podcast. Hello, Paul Ritchie.
Paul Ritchie, what a guy. That's all I'll say.
If you hate Tam as well, please come on the podcast because it would be delightful to see you destroy him.
Same goes for Kyro's. Yeah, I think we might we stood next to her at Easter Road, didn't we, Kev? And she absolutely scolded you.
Hates me.
Aye, so aye. She hates you. So if you're listening, Kyro's missus, come on. You come on as well.
Tell me to get a haircut.
Shave that tash.
I think we might only have like one player left, or two players.
Two players.
There's another striker, as far as I can work out. But that's on Kev to work out, because I don't know.
we must be short of a goalkeeper.
Well, I've already got the goalie, so it'll be the sub, whoever that was. Aye. And I'll be honest, with it cheating.
Remember, these were the pie, didn't even have a sub keeper. We beat Aberdeen to reach this final without a sub goalkeeper on the bench.
That's fair, actually. Yeah. So was there a sub goalkeeper? They're telling us there wasn't anyone, so it's been another outfield.
I think there's two subs left for you to get.
Right.
Is there? Who is it? Me?
Well, I said John Roberts, and he was definitely a sub because he didn't come on. He didn't start the game. He came on later.
So one person left on the bench then, because I didn't know if we said Rob.
I know we did. Said Rob. So is the person that's left that's on the bench a goalie?
I'm going to go with some.
Say we were pioneering
proper left field, Derek Holmes.
Who's your left field view? Shout, Tam.
Oh.
Roddy McKenzie. There you go.
That's good knowledge for you. I didn't even know you had that in your locker.
If it's not a goalie, it's got to be someone like, it'll be some like someone old school, like Stevie Frail or Scott Leach or something like that. So I'll go name a name, John Miller, because he was still on the team.
Oh. All
right.
Was it Kev Thomas?
It was not Kev Thomas.
Right. You just see him in that, I guess you see him in that pony Strombo shot.
Oh, wait a minute. Craig Nelson. Was he still there at that point? Or did he... Nope. Oh, shit.
You're on the right line, so it's a Shan goalkeeper.
Hogarth.
Miles Hogarth.
Yeah, it's the big hoagie, the Hogmeister.
Right, damn it. Who said it first?
The legends as well, that guy, isn't he?
Pam, who was the Hearts manager?
Are you kidding me on?
It got mentioned in the group chat. Was it Jeffries, actually? Sorry, was it?
Well, is that your answer or no?
Ah, yes.
It was Jim Jeffries, that's right. For a bonus point, does anybody want to take a stab in the dark at what the attendance might have been?
It would have been before Hampden's renovation.
The Hampden development.
So it would have been less. I'll say 41,500.
Was it not more before development?
No, so they had developed the terraces, but they had to put in the new stand. Mm-hmm. They had to put in that new stand by that point. So it would have probably been 39,000.
Damn.
I'll just cut off Kevin and go 38 then.
Yeah, prick.
You're the closest. It was 37.
Oh, was it?
37, was it?
Oh, where's that? More than that.
Aye, because that old stand didn't hold many folk in it, unlike the new one.
Nah, it wasn't multi-tiered.
But it doesn't make any difference. They're all still shite.
How
many Kevin Jameses to the roof?
Oh, 17.
No, I'll be more than that. Definitely more than that.
Do you want to have a guess, Tam? This was the godfather of penalty Rangers for the referee, if you want to take a guess at who that was.
Yeah.
What do you mean? What the ref was?
Who was the ref? He was the original penalty Rangers.
Hugh Dallas.
Well done, Chuck Dallas.
Okay.
That's correct. He has a son that was like a referee, wasn't he?
It still is. It was Andrew Dallas. It was the VAR.
He's no head of the Scottish refereeing board or something.
I don't think it's quite that high, but he was VAR for Rangers game on Sunday.
Oh, was he?
There you go. There we go.
family full of pricks, then.
Fuck it.
There you go.
Harsh.
Right.
Who wins?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Right. At least when I do this, I take the time to calculate the winner.
Yeah, but to be
let's clear, just all agree it was just me.
Pick the ones, how many I get? Right.
It's because I got one. And calculates the winner.
I got two.
You got two. Then got two taken off him for his ridiculous shouts of David Weir and Suso Santana. Yeah,
well, the last time I was on, I won. Actually, very surprisingly, to be fair, because it was a close run thing. So I'm quite happy to surrender the lead to Kev this time. So, yeah, and the all-time scorings, it's a one in the Kev column, not in the Tam column. That's all that matters.
Yeah, that is true. It's been a while. It would be a shocking podcast if I actually won.
Mate, it's happened before,
right.
And it's not good.
Right, let's move on to headlines. If we win, here's the big question, right? If we win the Scottish Cup, are we doing intro part three?
Well, I think it'd be ridiculous if we didn't.
There is clamour for it this week on Twitter.
Have we been
getting a share again? As always happens when our neighbours get a laugh.
For me, yeah. I think you have to do these things on a season by season basis, right? So you can't do it on a game to game basis because we'd run out of content. But I think
we'd be doing them every week.
Exactly. Yeah. I think once a season is an acceptable level, so I am all for it and anything you need.
Well, we said before that we retired them because both of them came after semi-final victories at Hampden because they were supposed to be once-in-a-lifetime moments, but they happen every other season for us nowadays. But with the Bournemouth Globetrotters and the millions of pounds investments and the 16-point swing and the Eli Johan Ballon d'Or and the Mercundes, the greatest player since Maradona, Pater and Specky, all the other guys on Hibs Twitter. If Hearts win the Scottish Cup and get guaranteed group stage football, and they are only 9 points now in front of Ross County, I may be persuaded to dust off a part three intro, but we'll wait and see. But let's talk about the events of Saturday outside or out with Tynecastle. It would have been a right good laugh inside Tynecastle as the news filtered through. I think Laurie Dunsire, Kev on Hearts TV, described it as a right Hibsing.
Yeah, I think that was his. I think that was his words. I generally think sitting in Section G, I could actually hear him laugh. If I'm being truthfully honest with you, that gives you an idea. But yeah, the news filtered through rather quickly. As everybody pulled their mobile phone out to just check and see what had actually happened. But I think they said that they went from elation to devastation in a matter of seconds. Well, that was definitely the opposite inside Tynecastle on Saturday afternoon.
Sounds like my sex life.
It is absolute some laugh that they're describing elation as being 40 seconds away from finishing in the top six. that's elation to them. That is incredible. You did highlight it in the community chat, Tam. The reaction to the Motherwell goal is absolutely superb.
It's like somebody, it's like going back to that Snapchat video where the boy goes in and goes, "What's happened? Did somebody die?"
That video that lives rent free in my video because I cannot laugh at the green cupcakes. The idea of somebody up the night before baking green cupcakes to then watch your team lose 2-0 to St Johnston in the Scottish Cup final or whatever it turned out to be is fucking superb. What's happened? Somebody died. You're just absolutely greeting in the poor wee cupcakes sitting in the corner, nobody touched them. Absolutely superb.
That gives me a reason to go back and watch that wee clip because I've never watched those cupcakes.
It's classic. It is superb. I'm back on Open Goal on Friday for the fans forum. I'll be genuinely interested to hear their take on Hibs, because I put a bit in the community chat and I actually did some stuff on Kickback as well, talking to some folk about just aware. Mikey Stewart was in absolute tears on Saturday on Sports End, if anybody heard
it. I did. And did you hear what was quite in? You might cover this in just a second, but Kenny, whatever his surname is, actually asked him, have you got a connection to this guy? Because the loving that you have for him just seems unsubstantiated. He never directly answered the question, so if you're going to cover it, then fine. But the Mikey Stewart tears.
It was more a broader point, right? Like, us in Aberdeen argue season after season about who's the third biggest team, right? And that'll probably sway back and forth as we, unless somebody cements themselves and stops themselves to being a basket case and goes on a run of 4 or 5 seasons in a row where they knock third out season after season. But that's a genuine argument. Do you know what I mean? You look through our histories, we've won the same amount of titles, we've got similar trophy hauls, etc., etc. Now we'll never be able to compete with their European record. But again, you argue that since Fergie, they've done almost absolutely nothing as a club. So like the argument's there. Right? Hearts and Aberdeen are more than happy to have that conversation. But genuinely, every single... So next season. So Hibs will finish no higher than 7th this season. None whatsoever. But yet, come day one of the week before the season starts next season, and everybody starts gathering again to talk about Scottish football, all your pundits, all your media people, all your podcasts, all your guys, written press, TV press, whoever it may be, every single one of them will have Hibs in the conversation for finishing third. Something that they've achieved 3 times since the turn of this millennium. 24 years, they've done it 3 times. The same amount of times as they've played in the Championship. They've played in the top 6, 11 times. Less than 50% of their time is spent in the top 6. More than 50% is spent in the bottom 6. Motherwell, Kilmarnock finished third more than them. Finished in the top 6 more than them. Abu Dhabi, even probably if I could be bothered to dig. Dundee United have probably finished third more than Hibs. But yeah, come next season, even though Kilmarnock will probably finish 4th this year and get European football, they will not be in the conversation for third. It'll be a case of consolidate top 6, etc. But yet, year after year after year after year, Hibs fans, media, pundits, they'll say that they should be top 6. On average, since the turn of the millennium, their average league position, anybody want to take a guess?
7th.
So they're now clamouring to sack a manager that has delivered exactly what and where they should be finishing. They sacked, if anything, they should be arguing amongst themselves to say, should they have sacked the manager that got them 5th? Do you know what I mean? One of their better league finishes.
This kind of dovetails into Mikey Stewart's point about how there was something wrong within the back scenes, the backstages, sorry, of the club. Because you think, right, Kilmarnock, when you first came out with that stat, kind of blew my mind that Kilmarnock have finished in the top 6 more often than Hibs. And fair enough, that is what it is. But then you think, you look at the management team that have all. They've been able to do that because they've had an absolutely solid management team. So they've had Derek McInnes done a good job this year. They've had obviously Steve Clark when he was there, done a good job when he was there. And that's all been, so I suppose, provided by the board. But the Hibs board just cannot get an appointment right. So you think, does it all just come down to like when you're judging a club's prowess, do you do it based on the decisions of the board or the amount of money they've got? Because if you look at the Kilmarnock argument, you would say it's the prowess of the board members making good decisions rather than the actual money they have in the bank, because Kilmarnock can't have anything like as much money in the bank as what Hibs do.
Well, Kev, I think the point we make all the time is that the problem that Hibs have is that their good seasons are based on whether or not we have a bad season. And that will always be the case. And it'll be the same next season as well. If they plough in millions of pounds and look like they're building the bedrock to be, you know, a force, but it could take season upon season to build it, a bit like Man City. Look at Man City 15 years ago. We're not even in the conversation now. Arguably, they're the best club in the world. They're about to win potentially back-to-back trebles. But that was a slow burner where the fans accepted that it's going to take time. If Hearts next season play in Europe till January, do well, I don't see us qualifying, etc. But say we can keep our league performances and we're there or thereabouts in third and they are continually behind us, they'll sack their manager. Their fans will demand it.
Yep. Yep. I think there's, you know, there's an expectation level on at Hibs and at Easter Road that they should be competing, you know, season in, season out with the rest. But as you rightly say, factually, it's not the case. And I've just done a wee bit of search there. From top six finishes from 2000, 2001 up to just this is 2016-2017 season, Hibs are on 7 and Dundee United are on 9.
Really?
Now, I know that that's, you know, that's a number of, you know, that's still, what, 7 seasons ago. So there's still, you know, additions to that particular, those numbers. But that just gives you an idea of as to where they currently sit. And as far as I'm concerned, it's great. If you're changing your manager 2-3 times in an 18-month period, you're not going to build any form of consistency whatsoever, other than consistently bad. And I think, you know, to an extent, we've got to also maybe give our players over the last season and a half a little bit of credit. Yeah, okay, we capitulated last season and given up third place. But when you consider we had played European football and everyone else, look at what Aberdeen have done this season with European football. You know, they didn't even get in the top six. So, you know, to get to where we were last season, we weren't maybe as bad as we genuinely thought we were at the time.
First time ever we've had 3 in a row, is it? European football.
So, and goes back to how, think of where that could have been had we did our job last season. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
It'd have been incredible. But, Tam, the overarching point is get it absolutely right up the minute. It's superb, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing. I would love to just go on to, like, Twitter stats for Edinburgh on Saturday night and just see how many deleted tweets there was, because there's so many bookmarks, so many things coming at me.
I've heard Blair Spittle is a bottom six signing, Penrice bottom six. We've got Justin Wilson Fish or whatever he's called, or Noah Moses Johannesburg, like just random guys for random clubs on loan, and they're like, these guys are the greatest players I've ever played for Hibs. And then you're still playing David Marshall and Paul Hanlon and Louis Stevenson and Joe Newell got their play of the year. That's unbelievable.
Right. I thought they hated Joe Newell. What happened to that?
That's unbelievable, man.
That's why the boy smacked that ball in his face.
And that is comes at there. We can't end it any better, where their highlight of the season was a 2-2 draw at Tynecastle. And I don't know if anything sums up the difference in levels, where, again, it was like the people last season that were talking about when we were slagging them for their pitch invasion for a last-minute equaliser in the third game of the season against us. And they were saying, are you had a pitch invasion when Oztok scored a screamer? Oztok scored for 40 yards, the last kick of the ball, to keep us top of the league, unbeaten, in a league campaign that's seen us win the title. You finished fifth behind us and had a pitch invasion for a 94th minute equaliser in what is essentially a pre-season friendly. Like, there are levels to these things. You had a pitch invasion at Livingston because you drew 1-1 or whatever it was. So it's couldn't happen to a better club. I cannot wait for the tears and snorters. I look for, if Hearts won the cup, I didn't even care if Hearts won the cup, just for how good it would be for Hearts. I just want to be back on Twitter and just see the reaction of all of the absolute slabs on Twitter, on Hibs Twitter, just greeting their eyes.
I'm going to have to say something here just to temper it a wee bit, right? And again, like, because Mr. Unpopular Opinion, who doesn't like roast dinners, would he, like, if you look at us versus Hibs, right? And that stat that you said that their average finishing position since, what, 2007th or something like that, right? They can no longer be considered a competitor of ours. Right, it's a bit like Arsenal versus Leighton Orient. No disrespect to Leighton Orient. There's still two football clubs in the same city. One of them heavily weighted towards success. The other one, absolute nonsense. Do you not feel slightly sad that they earn just a little bit better, that they could give us maybe a game? Or is it quite all right just to go use the absolute dregs of humanity and you're quite firmly in our rear view for the rest of time?
Nah, it's like playing table tennis with your wee sister. It's all right every now and again to give them a wee point or whatever, but if you've got to step it up and smash it, then you smash them with it, and that's what I like about them. Give every now and again, they'll give them a wee moment of glory in the sun, and then rein them back in. They are the best people on planet Earth to have beside you to make you feel better about yourself.
Fair. Okay.
Right. Talking of group stage football, thoughts on the other semi-final? Obviously, we'd spoke earlier there, it looks like Aberdeen completely and utterly gave up the ghost on this season, Kev. Do you see any form of upset?
I think the only form of upset would be that if Aberdeen scored, because that might blow a few coupons, to be truthfully honest with you. I can see being a fairly one-sided match and probably finishing 3-0 Celtic. Can't see anything else other than a Celtic win.
Aye. Anybody else? Any different of opinion to that?
No.
I don't know. It's a one-off game for me. Celtic do look a bit shaky, but at the same time, Aberdeen look absolutely terrible. But they do have a good side still, I suppose. But they could turn up. But I can't see it, realistically.
Celtic have looked shady at certain points throughout the season, but not recently, I think. They'll absolutely get the business done on Saturday. Won't even be an issue.
Yeah, and listen, it's...
To be fair, after... sorry to cut you off. After Sunday's result, they need to be concentrating on that Ross County getting a minute at the playoff maybe as well. So
Aberdeen are 5 in front of Ross County?
Exactly. St Johnston, 4 behind... 4 ahead of St Johnston as well, sorry.
Yeah, I thought it'd be interesting to see the fixtures after the... for the split, because it's one, you lose your first game in the split and it's proper squeaky bum times, because I don't think anybody in that bottom six will have had Ross County, Sir Don Cowie down to beat Rangers on Sunday.
That pained you to say that, didn't it?
But if I'll tell you now, Don Cowie, if you're listening, if you rein in Hibs and get them to the playoff, I will literally apologise publicly and profusely to you. You are the greatest player that's ever played for Hearts, if that happens. But
wow,
nothing will change if that does not. You're still a wank. We'll revisit once we know what's happening. But again, what I'm about to say is in no way, shape or form trying to compare, because it's two different stratospheres. But like Man City, Celtic are seasoned pros when it comes to winning things. You know what I mean? It's fine to win quarterfinals and fifth rounds, and it's fine to win in February. It's a totally different situation when you come to this part of the season. When it comes to the business end of the season, those players have won trebles, they've won stuff. Like, it's no surprise to see Arsenal and Liverpool yesterday collapse, and it's no surprise to see Rangers collapse as well, because it's... I think clubs are always in an easier position when you're chasing someone, especially someone that's a bit of a winning machine. It's different to have that winning machine right behind you, you know, in the rearview mirror. Everything that you do, like, you almost have one eye on what did they do type thing. It's a game of chess, and I can't see Celtic, as bad as they've been, slipping up to that Aberdeen side. Aberdeen are honking. It'll be up there as one of the biggest cup upsets ever if Aberdeen knock Celtic out on Saturday.
Do you know, Brendan Rodgers, if it does happen, doesn't survive that. He's like, even though he could go on and win the league, I don't think he survives getting beat off Aberdeen in the semi-final.
I think right now they're in a state where stopping Rangers winning the league is their number one priority. I think they would get a bit of a cushion if as long as Rangers don't win the league, I think you would get a stay of execution, so to speak, if they did somehow manage to lose to Aberdeen on Saturday. But again, for anybody that doesn't know, come full time on Saturday, if Celtic have knocked Aberdeen out of the Scottish Cup, it pretty much guaranteed us guaranteed group stage football, because only Kilmarnock could stop us from achieving that. But what, as it stands now, we're 11 points in front of them with 15 points left. So it would have to be an absolute monumental collapse from Hearts, even worse than last season. And Kilmarnock would have to win 5 out of 5. So I can't see that happening myself, touch wood.
Don't write it off just yet.
Even if Hearts did make a Ricky Hunt, there's just no way, it's not feasible that Kilmarnock will win every single game from now to the end of the season. So pretty much come full time, if Celtic win on Saturday, Hearts are guaranteed group stage football again, which, Kev, I'm hoping maybe frees the shackles a bit for the team on the Sunday, should it happen.
It becomes a little bit like a free hit, really, at the end of the day. And let's be truthfully honest, even sitting here now, no matter what really happens on Saturday, it still is a free hit. Let's be truthfully honest. It's a free hit. It's a semi-final. Everybody knows perfectly well the situation with regards to games against Rangers at Hampden. We all know it, but it has to change at some point. Why the devil not? We're 150 years old this year, as is the Scottish Cup. Do you go as far to say your name's on the trophy and all these kind of things? You could do. But it means that every single player has to be on their game on Sunday and need to understand what the game actually means, not only to the club, but what it means to the fans, given the actual year that it is.
Right, so Saturday, Livingston were the visitors to Tynecastle. Worst team in the league, going up against the third best team in the league. Anybody see the opening 20 minutes happening?
Nope.
God, no.
Let's talk before the 20 minutes. Let's talk, obviously, the big sort of, not shock news, I suppose, but the big talking point pre-game was the return of Craig Gordon. Thoughts?
I can see the wisdom in it. Obviously, he's been the cup keeper, for want of a better term. And you know, it's a big game, high profile, Hampden. It's been a while. Absolutely makes sense to give him a run out against, in double inverted commas, meagre opposition, just to get his, I suppose, his reactions up to par or whatever. But I don't know, even as I say that, I know that's nonsense, because like your reactions are going to be what they're going to be. But yeah, I can see the wisdom in it. But yeah, do I agree with it? Absolutely.
On the back of that, though, Ando, in terms of his reactions, I hope he's got that out of his system before Sunday, because holy shit.
We'll talk about that in a wee minute. Let's talk more, Kev, about, we've touched on it before, but the balancing act between Clark v. Gordon.
There is a balancing act there, and of course there is. But like Andrew says, I can see the rationale about bringing Gordon into the team, giving him a run out, giving him the chance to build effectively a playing relationship with that back four, because I think that back four starts on Sunday. So from that point of view, I understand it. But what it definitely showed in the first 20 minutes was some of his decision making, and to an extent, also going back to before the injury, before the double leg fracture, some of his distribution, you know, that came into question. But he's, you know, it's Craig Gordon, you know, every single one of us loves him. So would you have preferred not to play on Saturday and only for him to come in against Rangers on Sunday? Again, that's another debating point, isn't it?
I'm conflicted with the whole thing, I won't lie. I had a wee dig around some of the stats, because up until the Spartans game, Xander Clark had the most clean sheets in the SPL. It was like a 55% shutout rate or whatever it was. And then from that Spartans game till now, where the pressure of Craig Gordon there from him being rotated out, knowing that the cup games are happening, and obviously coupled with different factors and how goalkeepers, but his clean sheet rate of things dropped. You know, it's now like 45% or something. So you've seen a noticeable decline in his performance. Now that might just be because he's not as good a goalkeeper as, or consistently as good a goalkeeper as what Craig Gordon was. My absolute worry is that we've had two really good goalkeepers for the SPL. If you look at Joe Hart, garbage. Butland is probably the best keeper in the league. He's a good goalkeeper. But then you look at Dennis at Kilmarnock, rubbish. Mitov, rubbish. The Keller Roos or whatever it is at Aberdeen, garbage. Liam Kelly, rubbish. I actually think Xander Clark's probably the best of the rest outside of Butland. And I just, honestly, I get it. I love Craig G. Everybody knows that. We love Craig Gordon. He's a Hearts hero. Arguably the greatest player to ever play for Hearts. I would argue tooth and nail that he probably is, given we've never probably had a world-class player, and he is genuinely world-class. But you've seen on Saturday, he's a 41-year-old man that's not played for consistently for well over a year. Come into a team playing against the worst team in the league, I don't know if he covers himself in glory for either of the two goals. Now, don't get me wrong, the second goal is a disaster from a Hearts perspective. But every week, I think if Xander Clark did what Craig Gordon did on Saturday, there'd be uproar. There'd be threads all over Twitter, all over Kickback saying, get rid of him. And genuinely, my overarching worry is that we're going to have started this season with two really, really good goalkeepers and end this season or start next season with none, because people are kidding themselves on if they think that Xander Clark's happy for Craig Gordon to come in and play at the showpiece semi-final. The Scottish Cup is the cup. That's the one that matters. For him to be sitting on the bench watching someone else go and play, he's going to be absolutely livid. He's going to be furious. And it's no surprise that the rumours are circulating on Kickback and other social media platforms that Xander Clark's looking to leave the club in the summer. And then that leaves us with a 41-year-old man heading towards 42-year-old man as the goalkeeper, plus Harry Stone, who just got, I think he just got player of the year for Queen of the South, didn't he?
I'm conflicted.
So as much as I love to see Craig Gordon, we all know that. You know, club captain, absolute hero, legend. Love to see him play. But I don't know. It's either going to be an absolute masterstroke by Naismith, and we might see a legend leave how he started his career, you know, a trophy in hand, etc., etc. Or we might see the end of a legend and probably one of the best keepers in the league walking out the door as well. So I don't know what to make it.
I would be very, very disappointed in Xander Clark if that was to come to fruition, because When do we enter the Scottish Cup? It's, what, back in January? Maybe late January, early February, whenever it is, ages ago, right? So this kind of thing doesn't come as a surprise. Naismith is going to have told the squad, right, okay, this is the plan. This is what we're going to be doing in the goalkeeping position. Then it's not as if Xander Clark's going to find out the night before that, oh, wait a minute, Craig Gordon's in again for the Cup game.
No,
but
I get that, but that's not the argument,
well,
though,
is
it?
You know that this is going to happen. If you get all the way through to the end of the final, so the end of the competition in the final, and that's the way that the managers decided to play it, okay, fine, number one, you can throw your toys at the pram, or number two, you can just get on board with it, knowing that, right, okay, fair enough, this is a one-season thing. Gordon's not going to be around forever. I'll take this season as a transitional phase, and then next year, if it happens, then I could go mental, because you'd have more of an
Hearts
argument.
Hearts have won three trophies in 40 years that I've been alive. Xander Clark's just going to surrender winning a trophy, potentially watching the parade, watching the scenes, all that sort of stuff, and then go like, right, boys, I've been number one for 95% of this season, got your group stage football in Europe, but I, brilliant, Craigie, you go up and win a Scottish Cup medal and I'll sit on the bench and watch you do it. That's more the point. I get what you're saying. It's no, I don't think Stephen A. Smith has sucker punched them or hid from the fact that that was what the plan is, but as you go to the latter stages, you're now looking at, imagine like we only played, you know, Shanklin played in every single game but the Scottish Cup because Robbo was there or whatever it may be. That's just more my point, if you know what I mean. I think you, Xander Clark's the future, isn't he? He's the club's long-term vision for the number one jersey.
Yeah, but you'd like to think so. But then you also think of, and just to, been a while since we said devil's advocate, so I'll say it now, but then, think about it from through the other lens. Xander Clark, you walk out in Hearts because you're a little bit aggrieved at, you know, maybe not get, you'd still get a winner's medal. All he has to do is be named on the bench or come on as a sub appearance in the final or whatever, you know, whatever it is in order to get the medal. Fine. You're walking away for Hearts, probably the best thing that's happened to you in your career. Where the fuck are you going? Where are you going? Neighbour?
Nope. He won a league and cup. He won a league cup and Scottish Cup double with St Johnston, scoring a winner against Rangers in the extra time or whatever. Like, winning the cup with Hearts would be great, but it won't be the best thing.
Thomas, you can just delete everything I said before Corbett came out with a reply. But right, okay. But that aside, where are you going? Right,
I get it. You're not going to a place
with a better outlook than Hearts, realistically.
Another thing to caveat. To mirror it is actually, if you remember when we played Rangers in the Scottish Cup final the last time, Alan McGregor, that was his final season at Rangers, and they subbed Alan McGregor only 5 minutes to go because they were 2-0 up and winning the cup, and they brought him on rather than, they never let sentiment get in the way or whatever. They sort of played for the long-term future of the club or whatever and brought the club legend on at the last kick of the body. Say that he played in the game and got his medal or whatever it is. But like,
that's
still
so embarrassing, isn't it?
Oh, it's embarrassing, man. That cup final, I don't care. People can argue with me all they want. It's fine. Everybody will have their own version of why something was the best or the good. But that was the worst cup final I've ever been to watching Hearts. I've never been so disappointed in my football team as I was on that day. It was a shocker. Anyway, right. So Gordon starts. Anything else in the team? Team news that made you go, well, that's a bit strange.
I suppose I thought Nieuwenhof was meant to come back, but obviously that wasn't came. He wasn't even in the squad, was he?
No, he was the. I didn't believe he was going to be back for Saturday there, but I think there's maybe a chance that he'll be on the bench for Sunday. I think the only you know, not it wasn't a surprise, but the only ones that you maybe look at is Barry Mackay coming in as from a starting point of view. But you knew perfectly well if he was coming in to the team, there was a chance that he was only going to be getting an hour, which I think was exactly what he got, 58, 59 minutes. But I think the team on Saturday, with the exception of Gordon, effectively picked itself.
Yeah. Kingsley wasn't there on Saturday, wasn't it?
No, he didn't play. He came on.
Came on, second half.
I came on for Cochrane after, what, half an hour ago, something like that. So.
And obviously, Vargas came on as well. He didn't start.
Harsh on Kingsley, if you're asking me. I think Kingsley's been arguably as good as Kent this season for me.
Yep.
If one of them sits on the bench for me, you know who it is. Kairos doesn't start ahead of either of the two of them, but I get it. So the elephant in the room is, let's talk about the opening 20 minutes. We get a very early warning. Is it Newbley up front, or is it Tengi or Wiengi? What are the guys getting off? That had a header that he just basically comfortably headed back to Craig Gordon, but the opening 20 minutes was sloppy, to say the least, Tam.
Exactly that. We just didn't look like we'd started, to be honest. The Livingston pressed quite high for the start, and we kind of struggle with that sometimes. And yeah, two mistakes for the two goals that Livingston scored. Team mistakes as well. I know Gordon was a kind of mistake, but there was plenty of opportunities to get rid of the ball before it went back to him. And then the defence for the second one was terrible as well. So, as I say, hopefully we've kind of got that out of our system, and we can, because we'll need to be a lot tighter than that going in on Sunday. Because if we're like that for the first 20 minutes, we'll don't get away with it. But
that right. Well, that's what I was going to say next, Kev, is that we went to Ibrox only a month ago in the best form of our life for a long, long time and got our pants pulled down and got scudded 5. We can't start like that on Sunday.
God, no. God, no. And we, you know, we can say what we want about Gordon for the first one. My opinion, he should just get the boy at the park. But I think that side of the defence, with Atkinson and Kent, I think they need to have a look at themselves as well on Saturday, especially, as you rightly say, with the second goal. But if we start off like that on Sunday, we'll all be back on buses and that by 3:45. And, you know, back in Edinburgh as quick as Hibs were in 2012.
Yeah, so we did start sloppy, and you're right, I thought Atkinson and Kent for the second goal.
Yep.
Yeah,
Poor as I've seen him. Gordon, actually, before Kelly made it, made a couple of decent saves. At that point, we were battered, to be honest, the opening 20 minutes, yep, in terms of where we were, just couldn't. It wasn't that we didn't change drastically, but just what we were trying just wasn't coming off. It wasn't coming off. And then, obviously, you go 2 down. Again, we've already said nobody covers themselves in glory for any of the goals. But from that point on, Hearts were... Livingston couldn't cope with Hearts. Barry McKay, for me...
There was an obvious change in regards to the attitude as well, though, after 20, 22 minutes, in that nobody was wanting to put a tackle in. Everybody was, you know, nobody was following runners. You know, you could see it straight away at the game that it just felt that people were, you know, the players were going, big game next weekend, I don't want to miss out on that. So I'm not saying that we weren't going out into 50-50 challenges. I'm just saying that they weren't actually doing the basics like we've seen them do over the last few weeks as well as they could have done. And I think there may be an element of that was the fact that they also had it in their head, well, we're playing the team at the bottom of the league. They're not expected to do
anything. That's the bit for me that I would agree with, because I think there was an element of they were almost kind of similar to what happened in the Rangers game yesterday. They were almost waiting for things to happen without actually having to do it themselves. It was almost a case of, we're playing Livy, it's fine, we'll get the ball back. Like, it's only a matter of time until it shifts in our favour, without actually having to go for it. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, I actually felt that we were so taken aback by how Livingston played, because they'd trained and set up all week for a low block, like they did the last time, a team struggling. We all have to go and break them down. And I think what you've seen in the opening 10, 15 minutes where the no tracking runners was that they never even probably prepared for runners. They were probably like, you know, he's not going to go in behind. They're not going to two-man press. They're not going to have a trigger here. They're not going to do all this. And then we were like, shit, what the hell? Who's supposed to follow this? Because they're not supposed to be this high up the park. They're not supposed to be here. And once we got, I thought Devlin was brilliant. On Saturday, George Grant, I'm not going to keep labouring the point. George Grant plays Hearts win. It's as simple as that. He makes Hearts tick. But Barry McKay was instrumental in being that guy that Kilmarnock at home, we kind of struggled in bits where you're looking for somebody to do something a bit imaginative, to find that pass. And I think the opening 10, 15 minutes, Barry McKay was always looking for those passes and they weren't coming off. And we spoke about that a million times before. But the height of Barry McKay's powers the first season, you accepted that. You accepted that for 85 to maybe even 90 minutes, he would misplace a pass, he would maybe drift in and out of games. But when he found that pass and he spotted it and he executed it, It was putting someone one-on-one with a goalkeeper. It was cutting it back to somebody that shouldn't have got the ball and it created a goal or whatever. And you would go like, well, you accept the fact that he does absolutely nothing because the things that you can see on a football park are incredible. And each goal, Barry McKay plays a part in it,
yeah.
Whether it be the actual assist, whether it be the ball that goes through, etc. He was... Livingston couldn't cope with Barry McKay, coupled with the fact that Shankland and Forrest and Devlin and we were getting bodies past and Grant was going forward. We were committing men into the box. It was superb. And I think every goal was as good as the other. Livingston just couldn't. Folk would say, like, why did Livingston not just shut up, show up, or, you know, see that that's where we were, where our plan was or whatever. But again, it's one thing to say that that should have happened. It's another actual doing it. The third goal for me, Kev, is as good a goal as you'll see.
Oh, aye. I think from the passing and movement, and some of the runs off the ball, which took a number of players away, created space. You know, if you one of those ones, if you could look at it from the sitting on top of the roof of the Gorgie, it would actually even look better. Because you would actually see the movement, you would see the runners. But I did laugh when you were talking about Barry McKay and how he played on Saturday. The old boy that was sitting behind me was quite happy to see him going off on Saturday with the parting shot of "You've done absolutely all today," which was just magic. I sometimes wonder if the boy can actually see the pitch, never mind anyone else. But I thought Barry McKay gave exactly what probably Naismith asked him to do on Saturday. Give me an hour of Barry McKay, and that's exactly what you got. And as I say, the movement and the work rate that we had on Saturday for that third goal especially was great.
Yeah, Barry McKay is one of those players that I've said for ages. I think I said it on here as well that he's the one I'm most excited about. If Naismith is what we think he is, and he's, you know, a coach that's going to get, we had this conversation this time last year, exact same, you know, who in the team had Robbie Nielsen made better? Who in the team had Robbie Nielsen took to the next level, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, you'd struggle to answer that question genuinely. Whereas this season, we're looking at, well, Shankland's all-round play and goals is outstanding. You know, you can see his value in the team. Now, Robbie Nielsen played him in those positions last year as well. You know, how many times did we bemoan why Shankland on the right wing, why Shankland playing in the 10, all that sort of stuff. Whereas this year, it makes sense. You know, you watch him and he adds value everywhere he goes. I think Kyle Riles has got better. Nathaniel Atkinson's got better. Xander Clark's got better. You look at all of the players that he's improved, Forrest, night and day. Vargas has grown into the team, undroppable almost. And Barry McKay is that one now. If he can get a tune out of Barry McKay and take him to the next level, he might be the one guy that shows finally all the potential that Barry McKay has. When I thought for that 25-30 minute spell in the first half, Barry McKay just, he had Livingston on absolute strings. Obviously, good to see Oda get a goal as well. Like, again, another player that I think's got bags of potential as well, Ando. He's got quite a lot of goals, actually, if you do his goals to minutes.
Aye. I think it's one of those... Given his position and whatnot, you would expect him to score a lot more. But if I look at things on balance, I'm quite happy with his contribution. I think he's one of these guys a bit like Boyce in the terms when he plays that, okay, fair enough, you expect him to be scoring more, but if he doesn't score more, you'll take that at the expense of providing more for the team overall in general. But I'm pleased for him that he got a goal, but I don't think his goal tally is going to be the make or break of him if we're talking about on those terms, but good to see.
Well, if you look at last year, Tam, I think Shankland and Gino were the goal scorers. Now the goals are finally, for a long time they weren't, but you know, Oda, Forrest, Vargas,
Grant, even,
they're all chipping in now and half. Devlin finally getting by a defender and getting by the striker, sorry, and getting a goal on Saturday's positives in it.
Absolutely. And it's a lot better to see. And I think it kind of relates to what you were saying there, but Shanklin's all around play. Like on Saturday there, he didn't have to be the main goal for it. He had a brilliant game, Shanklin. Don't get me wrong, he was brilliant at just creating chances, doing everything. And I think that sums up that the rest of the team can go out there and score, which is good and exactly what we would need if we want to cement that place in third going forward, to be honest.
And that's a bit of Kev, the Shanklin's play that I loved on Saturday that people maybe underappreciate is, like, if we were sitting here right now as a management team saying, right, we're playing Hearts on Saturday, number one focus for our team talks will be, can we go to Stoke Lauren Shanklin scoring goals? And I think at the start of the season, and maybe at points last season, Hearts as a team struggled with that, and so did Shanklin. This season, Shanklin's out. Kyle, you're going to be touch tight to me. Sound, I'm standing on the touchline. You want to come over here? Follow me. Do you know what I mean? Here we go. Two of you are going to come and mark me. Sound, right. Well, Forrest needs to get by me. Vargas needs to get by me. Devlin, Barry McKay, Grant, they need to get by me. And that's what he did. So for every goal, for every goal on Saturday, Livingston focused on Shanklin because he's a goal scorer, and Shanklin unselfishly laid them on a plate to his striking partners.
Yeah, and I think if you go back a number of weeks and months, we were screaming out for more of that, you know, and it has now started to click into place. I think I looked at before we started recording, he's now on 6 assists as well as 26 goals. So when you consider, you know, when you consider those kind of numbers, I'd maybe question if MD's actually assisted in more goals for Hearts this season than what Shanklin has. And that comes down, yeah, and that comes down to exactly what you say. You know, opposing players are now marking him tightly because they know perfectly well he's the danger man. And from that point of view, he's happy to take one, two players away down a channel, open up space in the middle. But it's just taking a bit of time to get that person, that player, be it Grant or be it Oda, Forrest, whoever it may be, to actually burst into that particular bit of open space and open ground. And we've seen that with all three goals, or the first three goals anyway, on Saturday, because they were just effectively carbon copies of every single one.
Right, even the fourth goal, Kev. It's no surprise that I know it's a bad defensive header or whatever, but they've been 2-0 up. They're now 3-2 down, and they're still too close. They're still too high, still too worried about what could Shanklin do, etc., that they've completely and utterly missed the fact that, well, Oda's clean through. Right. And obviously, it's a Stonewall penalty. You can see that there. The thing I liked the most, Ando, about the penalty was, obviously, and for his own standards, it's been a bit of a drought for Shanklin, with three games without a goal or whatever. It was nice to see George Grant give him the ball.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think as soon as I knew it was going to be a penalty, then it felt only right that he was going to be the one to take it. And let's just have a wee word about that penalty. Like, it's nothing but perfect. See the amount of power that ball is placed with, but with pretty much. It almost makes it look effortless. It's unbelievable. It's probably one of the best penalties I've seen. Like, if you get all the modern stuff, like people do the Panenka down the middle and all that sort of stuff, very good. But in terms of just being able to blast that home, the keeper is never getting that. Even if he gets a hand to it, it's breaking his wrist. It's like the amount of power in it is unbelievable. Absolutely class.
He's the better. Obviously, he's the best goal scorer we've had since Robbo, but he's actually only probably Scatchell is the only one he hits the ball
power
properly.
Yeah.
Power with very little back left. Like, he just, his technique's perfect. It's on point all the time. When you look at, like, Boyce, for example, who can shoot and has power and stuff, but never seems as deliberate as Shankland, if you know what I mean. He knows exactly what he's up to, and the penalty is just perfection.
What Kev, I did think, or what I found interesting on Saturday, was Shankland at no point looked at Grant when Grant picked the ball up for the penalty. He didn't look at him. He intentionally walked away. I think even Shankland in his mind had it that Grant was taking that penalty on Saturday. But Grant walked over to him. He was at the corner of the D and just put the ball in his chest. He says, you know, he must have said something to him along the lines of, you know, go and finish the game off, put it away. And yeah, as we've already mentioned, he done that with aplomb.
Yeah, it was good to see. And then pretty much from there on out, it's game management, isn't it? It's just trying to see the game out, not getting injuries for the game on Sunday. The interesting thing, I think, was is that the third or the fourth time this season we've been 2-0 down and came back?
Third, yeah.
Twice against Dundee, one against Ross County, four against Livy.
Forgot.
So four.
Forgot about twice against Dundee, sorry.
Again, I've said it a million times before, it's one of the things I like the most about this team is that you knew fine well under Robbie Nielsen, you went a goal down, maybe, as soon as you went two goals down, it was sharp shop, it was job done, it was all the Craig Levein save face and blame somebody else and see what happens next week, put it right next week type thing, whereas Naismith is very much, no, you fix it now and we'll fix what went wrong in the training park next week, but you don't get away with just leaving that on the park. You have to be better than that. So the only other funny thing on Saturday was the guy getting sent off on the bench, which was quite funny.
Didn't realise actually what had happened until I watched it back on Sports Scene on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
It looked like Martindale gave him, it looked like.
Aye. Boy still sitting there, raging, turned to stone.
Well,
what about the willingness of Tagawa to get a goal? It seemed like everyone wanted that to happen, but
I felt a bit sorry for Tagawa in the sense that both, but by the time he came on, both Grant and Mackay were off, weren't they?
Yeah, true. The ones that could pick out that pass.
They were the ones that were picking at the passes and stuff. And again, like I said, it's different. I know maybe sense of perspective and the feel-good factor a bit around the club right now, but there's a difference between when I watch Tagawa versus when I watch Keogh. You know, Keogh, it was never happening for Keogh. Never, ever, ever. But Tagawa, I'm still willing to be like, well, give him some time, let him settle, let him get to know people, trust the process type thing. We'll see where it goes type thing. He came to us, he scored like two goals or something in his whole career. So he was never going to be a prolific goal scorer. Plus, he also has Shankland in front of him. But yeah, I like that he got stuck in, he ran about, etc. So yeah, fair play to him.
I'm calling it now, like Hampden pitch. He'll come on.
That would be some story, wouldn't it? That would be some story. Well, you nice segue, professional as always. You would expect that from This Is My Story.
But he's not very good at quizzes, so I'd be good at segueing.
Aye.
I've never done the segue, actually.
Couldn't eat a whole one, though. Right. Hampden, Sunday. What's our thought? How do we win the game?
The good thing is, Sunday there, Ross County have just showed it can be done. I think we need to go out there and actually press them high that way, rather than sit back and play our usual game and try to build for the back. I think we really need to press them, have some pace on the wings and go that way.
Ross County press them?
Do you not think they did?
I thought they played a very high risk game of invite Rangers onto them because they know that they overload and attacks and then try and counter, which is balls over the top, runners, etc. etc.
You're probably right.
There you go, actually. Laura Campbell. Sorry, I forgot I was supposed to be saying that,
etc. etc.
But yeah, I agree with you, though. I agree with you. If you look at, you've seen Kev in the last two Rangers outings, two different ways that can unsettle them. Celtic pressed them aggressively from minute one in the Old Firm, and it absolutely suffocated them. They couldn't handle the press. It put them off the rhythm. And then Ross County did the almost opposite of it in terms of surrender the midfield, let them have the ball, let them overload in areas, let them aggressively attack it, and then hit them on the break with pace. Do you have a preference? Do you think the club will go for one or the other, or will we just go try and play our own game and see where it gets us?
I think what you want to remember is, from my point of view anyway, if you come up against slightly better players, if you give better players the time and the ball to do what the hell they want with the ball, you're always going to put yourself under pressure. Personally, I would like to see us shut them down quickly, put a proper press on them straight away. Don't let them settle on the ball properly. You know, don't give them the time that they want. I think even if you consider the first game at Ibrox earlier in the season, even then, you know, we were shutting them down a bit quicker than we did in any of the games at Tynecastle. Or the game the other, 2 months ago at Ibrox. We really need to, in my opinion, shut them down very quickly and just do not give them the time and the ball. And I think a lot that was identifiable in the Celtic game, as you rightly say.
And though the hard thing for all of that is Hampden's huge massive. It's a very, very big pitch. If you do press them, then, you know, they can pop you just as easily as you want to press them. What are you hoping to kind of see on Sunday?
If I'm honest, I don't know. Like, I've been thinking quite a lot about this recently, is that, like, we have the potential to beat anyone on our day, right? But how we overcome this Rangers side on that pitch, I don't know, right? It's one of these things that I think, see if we had... It's going to sound really, really stupid now that I'm saying it out loud. See if we had enough practice on a pitch that size against an opposition of their calibre, I think we'd eventually figure it out. It's a bit... I don't know. I just think, as good as our team is, I think we turn up to these games a little under-equipped, right, in the sense that there's probably something that we can do better. To try and overcome the obstacles that are in front of us. But I'll be honest, I don't know what the answer is. I genuinely don't know. And I think once I know the answer, everyone else on here will know the same answer as well.
It's mindset for me is massive for Sunday, because we see it from our point of view. If we were playing Hibs on Sunday, we'd all pretty much be very confident that we'd win. We have history on our side, which sounds crazy to say, but it does play a part. Yeah, it plays a part. It lays heavy on you. The longer a game goes on, you know, we've all been there ourselves. You know, Hibs are absolutely battering us, but they can't score. The longer that happens, the more they start to think about the last game, and oh, this is history repeating itself, and the crowd gets quiet because they understand what's happening. This Rangers team have battered us, beat us every game they've played this season, the last one being an absolute cakewalk. They've beat us at Hampden already in a cakewalk as well this season. So it's mindset for me. That's the biggest one for me, is if the players believe, show a bit of belief, then let's just go see. I just want us to lay a finger on them. That's all I ask. The last couple of times we've been there, you've just seen it there. We just did Hampden 5-1, League Cup semi-finals, battered. Last Scottish Cup final, battered. That semi-final in the League Cup there, battered. Like, we've gave Ellis Sims is the only one that's gave them even a slight scare when he hit the post. In the opening couple of minutes of the Scottish Cup final. So from that aspect, that's all I'm looking for.
You could look upon it like the game on the 16th of December against Celtic at Celtic Park. You know, same kind of idea. You know, we haven't beaten Celtic at Celtic Park for God knows how many years. I appreciate that, you know, there's not been anything to even look at from a beating Rangers at Hampden point of view, but could be, you could look upon it as exactly the same kind of game, especially in the magnitude of it as well.
These things, it's like when we beat Celtic in 2012, folk see the scoreline and be like, oh, brilliant, what a day it was to be. But you got to remember that we were very, very lucky on the day things went our way. Celtic missed chance after chance. I'm pretty sure they scored one that was offside marginally.
Boy, hit the post for 2 inches.
Yep, right after we scored as well. And then, obviously, the handball for the penalty. Yeah, if that's given against us on Sunday at that time of the game, with the game at 1-1, we are screaming. We are screaming conspiracy. So you have to have luck on your side in these games. But the biggest thing is that Rangers will go to that game and they'll treat us like we treat Hibs in these matches. They'll almost feel that they're in the final already. So we have to go and match that and give them a bit of a fright. So, big boy time. Let's put our predictions out there for the Scottish Cup semi-final at Hampden versus Rangers on Sunday. Ando, what is your score prediction for the match?
Bit interference on the line, man. I can't really hear you. Let's come to me first. I'll go Rangers 2, Hearts 1.
Okay. Kev?
0-2 Rangers.
Thomas?
0-0. Hearts won on penalties. Fuck it. I'll sit
it. If it goes to penalties on Sunday, I will be...
Oh, my God. You will be there.
I will not you'll be outside. If it goes to penalties on Sunday. I'll leave. Won't be able to handle that.
Similar vein, if it goes to extra time, I will have to leave because of the trip that I need to make back home. If it goes to extra time, there's no way I can make it home on Sunday night. Just cannot be done.
That might be a good thing.
You know, enough people in Livingston to stay at someone's house should we win. Sorry? You know enough people in Livingston to stay at someone's house should we win an extra time or penalty?
Absolutely.
If it's a draw up till extra time and then Ando's not there to see it, we might actually win. So it might be actually a good time.
Well, Ando was there with me the last time I went to extra time versus Rangers.
Right.
And we got studied. So.
Fair. We'll work it out.
I'm hoping and I just want us to show up. That's all I want. The game for me, and this is proper tin pot small guy mentality, and I apologise for it. The game that matters to me is the Saturday one. I want Celtic to win. We need Celtic to beat Aberdeen. That's the one there. If that happens, then Sunday, like you said, it's whatever happens. It's a bit of a day out, a celebration. Showpiece semi-final, just any embarrass ourselves, that's all I hope for. And in that vein, it'll be 3-0 Rangers.
I agree with you though. I think the main thing...
Not 2-2.
Oh, it's got you there.
Stop that couple of weeks, Scott, to be fair.
Did he?
Yeah. He says it's not been 2-2.
I stopped that because we got beat off Ross County.
Fair enough.
But here's something that we've not spoken about because it came up. So James Tavernier scored a penalty on Sunday and it was his 50th penalty for Rangers. Now to put that into context, Hearts went from what, 1990 something, when Robbo was the last, well, Jamie Walker did it, but Robbo was the last striker to do it, to get to 50 goals. We had to wait for Lauren Shankland last season, or this season actually, to get to 50 goals. For them to have a right back that has scored 50 penalties is insane. I think yesterday they actually broke a world record for the amount of penalties that they have been awarded in a calendar year or something like that, or whatever it was, in a season or something. incredible that they get so many decisions. And the decision to go on Sunday was mental, but it was a penalty. That's the world that we live in. Now, we got one against St. Mirren, Celtic got one against them, etc. So it is fair, but it is bananas that they get so many penalties. So prepare yourself for my 3-0 will include a James Tavernier penalty, just like the last time we played them at Hampden. So there we go. Right. Well, that was fun and cheery for us.
Given the circumstances, it's okay. I think we've definitely done better, and we definitely have done worse.
From elation to devastation in 30 seconds.
Well, actually...
what a life. We'll have the last minute to us laughing at our City rivals in the bottom six, because why not?
I was going to say, because that just tunes in nicely what I was about to say after we press the stop record button, but we'll leave that for now.
Right, boys. Let's hopefully see you all Sunday. Monday when we podcast next. Hopefully we've got a Scottish Cup final to look forward to. Hopefully we get an Ando play the music, and we can bask in our glory of how unbelievable Heart of Midlothian Football Club are. Or regular listeners, it will be back to normality next week with tears and snores.
Beauty.
Or you'll be away in a half and it'll be 2 weeks. That's the other option.
Yeah, that'd be very true. Depending on how badly we get beat, I could also be away in a half. Great trips. Thanks for listening.
Catch you later.
See you all next week. No worries. See you later.
See you.
Gorgeous.